Who is Cole Kublik?
No idea.
This could be troubled.
Now with the call, Cole Kublik.
Auburn.
We just talked to Kublik a little while ago.
You watch him now on the screen.
It's bad ball. It's bad football.
That was Jim Bellett, number 61.
I get.
Speak up, please.
Get you some of that, Jalen Tabor.
Is that good enough for you?
I'm almost embarrassed.
You can be miserable, but they are going to be miserable with you.
I said what I said.
We have to score.
What an exciting time in America.
And here he is, having the time of his life.
Don't clap. That could be tough. Don't clap.
These kids have been amazing. I mean, they've just been absolutely amazing to look at that group right there and go, that team is, you know, tied for first place in the league. When you look at all the teams you've seen, think about the whole league. These kids have continued to find a way all year long. And even at times, even in this game tonight, when we made a couple of runs to close the gap, you weren't surprised because that's what we've been doing all year long. But Arkansas was where they were able to, you know, withstand those runs. And I've got confidence we can pull this thing off because we've done it all year long.
But kind of haven't found a way always. He says they continue to always find a way. Didn't find a way against Florida. Didn't find a way against Arkansas. Now you're set with a basically one for everything game against South Carolina at home. That place will be rocking Saturday.
You would hope it would be, because that's a win gets you the SEC regular season championship. I know it's technically a share, but you would own the tiebreaker over Tennessee. Lost, and you need Tennessee to lose to be able to get that. Auburn's lost 4 of the last 7. Auburn is a team that is not shooting as well from the 3 as they have been doing to start the year. Two of their best 3 shooters are 1 of 13 last night, and have not been shooting it well down the stretch. So Auburn looks tired, man. Auburn looks a little tired.
Well, I was going to ask you that.
They put a lot of running, a lot of race to space, a lot of threes.
A lot of race to space?
Race to space, yeah.
We had a tweeter into the show, but earlier talk about how tired he thought the team looked. You feel like that's an issue?
I feel like they looked a little tired last night.
And how much? That's probably the worst thing you want to hear going into postseason basketball play.
It is. South Carolina won't push you as much as far as the pace is, but Arkansas is a tough matchup for someone like Auburn, because Arkansas already shoots the ball faster than anybody in the SEC anyway. So they're already another pace team. And the reason it didn't affect them too much in the first game is because Auburn was making those threes and was making those long shots before. But now the long rebounds put Arkansas in transition. You look underneath and you get like a Daniel Gafford, who's 6'11", and you take advantage of a guy like Horace Spencer, who is, quick check, not 6'11". Also is a guy who fouled out in 12 minutes last night. I mean, Bruce Pearl talked about the foul trouble that Auburn got in. That's something they have to be able to avoid with whatever, quote, bigs they have left.
Yeah.
Which includes a guy like Chuma Okeke, who is, he's fine, but he's not the starter. Some people are calling for him to start basically after the last couple of games. But Auburn's a team that's trying to get its bearings about him going into SEC tournament play, because I think Auburn's overachieved this season from what people were expecting. And I think right now some of it's catching up to him with some of the size teams they've played recently, including Arkansas, and the fact that they put up so many shots. I think they're a little winded. I think they're just a little winded. And Arkansas more so will wind you than anybody else. But I think they looked a little tired last night.
Will it change at all if they don't win the regular season title and they go into the tournament as the 2 seed? Is there any difference in time off going into when they start the SEC tournament play?
A couple hours.
Like maybe later in the day, essentially?
I think they split those up to where the 2 seed and the 1 seed play in 2 different sessions. Not just back-to-back, but 2 different sessions. So it'll be a handful of hours, a difference of play. But that'll be the main difference. So, I mean, if Auburn, you're going to get double byes anyway. So they won't have to play till, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday if they continue to play on and win the SEC. If they get the SEC finals, I should say, against whomever.
Auburn loses last night. Alabama loses last night. Auburn a chance to pull off the regular season SEC championship this weekend. Some of that will be based on what the Tennessee Volunteers do as well. Alabama has a chance to have to play their way into the SEC tournament, essentially. And this is not where a lot of people expected this Alabama team to be.
Well, no, there is a theoretical shot that Alabama has to play in the play-in day, which is the Wednesday of the SEC tournament, which has mostly been the Auburn day, because Auburn's been that bad. If LSU wins out, I think if Georgia beats Tennessee, and I think if Texas A&M beats Alabama, and maybe one other thing has to happen, which are all possibilities, mathematically could happen, then Alabama could be the 11th seed, which means they would play on the Wednesday night. This is, regardless if they play Wednesday or early Thursday, this has been a complete disaster for Alabama. This season has been so disappointing. There's no other way to logically look at this. There just isn't.
Where do you place the blame? Is this on coaching?
I think it has to be on coaching. Because you have Braxton Key, you've had Dazon Ingram, you've had Dante Hall, you've had Colin Sexton and John Petty. You've had all of these guys for the vast majority of the season. Jones has played well for long stretches of time. And Herb Jones is a guy that, you know, people are calling on the internet calling Herb Jones Trey Young's daddy. I mean, he handled him in that game against Oklahoma.
So is it when you say coaching, is it not effectively being able to motivate? Is it not coming up with a plan that fits your players' talents best?
I think it's more fits your talents best than motivate, because Colin Sexton's played well all season. His numbers look good, but
Colin Sexton's going to do the same thing if it's the And One Tour, if it's the Harlem Globetrotters, or if it's Kansas. I mean, he's that talented. He's going to be that guy, no matter who he's playing with or for.
Yeah, he's super talented.
So does the blame come with not being able to figure out with him in the lineup what everyone else's role is then to be?
That's part of it. Part of it is, you know, guys like John Petty have gone through long stretches where they can't make buckets, and their whole thing is that they're sharpshooters from beyond the arc. I mean, I think he had 10 in a game earlier this season. I think he had 8 against Auburn shortly after that. You just haven't consistently gotten the performance from really anywhere on the court outside of Colin Sexton. Now, Dante Hall has probably been your second most consistent player on the team. But this has turned out to be a really, really strange and bad season for Alabama. We talked with Chris Stewart earlier in the week why Dante Hall wasn't getting more touches in the Florida game in the paint. I mean, he only shot the ball 4 times or 5 times in the paint. It's brought up the fact that Florida clogged up the lane. Well, you got to adjust to that.
Yeah.
You got to take care of that. You got to fix that. And Alabama hasn't been blown out in all these games. I get it. But part of being a good team is winning close games. You got to be in the game, and you got to win those to be a really good team. And Alabama has the talent to be much better than what they are. They're a 23-win team masquerading as a 17-win team right now. They have left 5-6 wins on the table this season. They have left so many games on the court that it's basically put their SEC, NCAA bid on the line. They are easily a bubble team right now. And there's not a gimme this weekend against Texas A&M.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Everyone that seems to play Alabama in the rematch that Alabama beat the brakes off of comes back and beats the brakes off of them.
Let me ask you this, though, going back to Auburn, and you and I told you that I bought in after the Kentucky win. That was big. They needed that, and that Kentucky team looks different since that loss, by the way. How has your opinion changed of what Auburn is possible of accomplishing this postseason in the last 2 weeks?
It's not. This is the Auburn team that we've seen throughout the entire season. I mean, not as far as the losses are concerned.
2 weeks ago, you said they're very real chance for them to be a Final Four team. You did an Arky's 60 log on their that why not Auburn is essentially what you said. Why not this Auburn team?
It's called time to kill. And yeah, Auburn could still get hot. Auburn's a team that's very much reliant on their outside shooting, and if it doesn't go well, then you know what, things can go poorly for them. And it will all be based on the matchups that they get. But if Auburn doesn't shoot well like they have in the last couple of games, then they've lost 4 of 7 mainly because of poor shooting. And earlier in the season, they were able to keep pace and to eventually hit that stride where they do go on like a 20-6 run to get back into and pull away from other teams. This time, it's different only because it's later in the season and they looked a little gassed. And if they don't find another team, like if they got up against a Virginia, they could be all right. Like that kind of pace team. That's,
right.
That's really slow. It's not the greatest of examples. But teams like Arkansas are poised to be able to give them trouble if Auburn doesn't hit their shots. Auburn didn't hit their shots. Arkansas was able to push the effort, push the floor, like they do anyway. That's kind of their thing. And then when they're not given the having to push the floor, they got size underneath that can take advantage of a Horace Spencer or a Chuma Okeke what's the other guy's name I'm thinking
Mustafa
of?
Mustafa Heron?
Deshaun Murray. They could take care – they can handle those guys. And Auburn got into foul trouble yesterday too. I mean, Arkansas is a bad matchup for Auburn if Auburn's not hitting their shots. I hope people are understanding that going into the game. Auburn still has a chance to be an Elite Eight, Final Four type team if – and only if they hit from beyond the arc. If they don't, teams can take advantage of them based on the matchups, and it could be a lights-out city. Auburn could find themselves battling from down 10 the entire game like they did last night.
All right, let's get the 10 After Tweets brought to you by First Family Mortgage. Go to 1FMC.com.
Bring me the tweets!
WMSMVTV Nashville. Just in, Decatur County schools will be closed today due to flooding.
Flooding in the schools? You mean Decatur City, right?
James Spann.
That's your school. That's your school area.
This is Tennessee. Decatur County.
Decatur County is where Decatur City is.
Wrong. James Spann, 2 minutes ago, tweets, some flooding is possible across the Tennessee Valley through tomorrow.
Should be. It's supposed to be raining basically the entire time that that there is daylight or night light.
Night light. Couple tweets coming into the show on Bama Hoops. Chris Crow tweets at Cube Show, this basketball season has been a disappointment for Bama basketball, period. It's not just coaching, it's boneheaded plays and some players' effort. Rebounding is effort, and that's lacked big time down the stretch. Hashtag R-O-L-L-T-I-D-E, emoji script A.
Would you like to read, Cole, the stat from last night on the offensive rebounding for Alabama versus Florida? I mean, I could just give it to you now. That works, too.
Sure.
Alabama out-rebounded Florida 46-31, 20-6 on the offensive side. And got steamrolled last night. I do agree with this. Rebounding is effort, so I didn't think last night was a huge effort thing. Defense is effort too.
Yes.
And
you've been very complimentary of how strong of a defensive team Alabama has been all year.
Well, statistically they've been one of the best. But Auburn last night struggled in that aspect. Again, hard to defend a team like Arkansas the way they do it. This comes from Razorback Basketball, which is at Razorback MBB. They came in together, and they'll enter the record books together. Daryl Macon and Jalen Barford, two guys we talk about a lot on the show, are the only players in program history to reach 1,000 points in the same game. Cole, that...
By the way, you scored 2,000 points in a game. That's definitely a record.
The final in that game, by the way, was 2,074-82.
Wow. Two players go for 1,000 points in one game?
Yeah, pretty crazy. Pretty crazy. But you know what? They deserved it in that case.
Dave Fleming tweets, what makes you think we are limiting minivan talk to only one segment at 8:20? We can go other segments.
Already,
we just kind of blocked that one off. So
it's already been discussed, so it's already had more than one segment. So.
Tim Watson tweets in, face it, this Bama team isn't a team at Cube Show at Arcuche. Kind of the antithesis of what Auburn has been the majority of the year. Auburn, no elite NBA talent, good team. Alabama, some elite NBA talent, not great team.
I think it's 17-13, 14-13 with Colin Sexton on the roster and playing in the game. I think there is something to be said for that. And I know some people think that the future for Alabama is bright because they have good players coming in. They have good players now. The ability to take a one-and-done type talent, add him to a four-star, and having an all-SEC freshman from last year, plus Dante Hall playing out of his mind at times, and to be 17-13, that's kind of remarkable in a bad way. That's borderline Ben Simmons LSU territory.
Cam Walker with a
not
great...
Not as bad as Markel Fultz Washington.
Sure. Cam Walker with a great tweet in this morning at Cube Show. Hard to get offensive rebounds when you're not missing shots.
Yes, but to get 20 offensive rebounds and to still go 0-for-19 at one point, that should be considered just as impressive.
Florida was still 7-24 from behind the three-point line. They only shot 48% for the game. So they weren't just lights out, but a lot better than Alabama was.
Yeah, Alabama. It's hard to win a game when you go 14 straight minutes without a field goal made. It's really, really hard. Mike Sparkman says, when you miss as many shots as Alabama missed, offensive rebounds are bound to be higher than average. Yeah. Just didn't get the second chance points.
All right.
And you were getting, by the way, the rebounds. Something should have happened. You should have been able to head a ball in as easily as you missed 19
Florida
straight
tried
shots.
That against Tennessee last week. It didn't work. All right, we'll get to a break. When we come back, Mark Burnett's going to talk more about this Bama Hoops team right after this.
Yeah, it just wasn't one of our best efforts, but give Florida credit. It's another situation where we've already gone on the road and beat them on their home court. They were coming back trying to even the series late in SEC play. So give them credit. Just wasn't one of our best nights. I can't think of any team I've coached here in the 3 years where we've gone 4-for-30 from the field in the first half. And we just missed too many layups. Obviously, Hudson got hot on us there for a stretch. He put up 8 quick points on us, and they never looked back.
It's Avery Johnson, Alabama head basketball coach, after last night's loss to the Florida Gators. We will visit with Mark Burnett now. He covers the Crimson Tide. Mark, how do you explain what this Alabama basketball team is and has been this season?
Well, it's funny because, after they beat Tennessee, I thought, okay, Alabama is good at home. Alabama is not very good on the road. But they have enough sort of top 25 wins to where they should make the tournament outside of a complete collapse. Then they beat LSU, and I think, okay, maybe this Alabama team is ready for the big moments. And then, boom, this four-game losing streak. And the thing in this four games, two losses on the road, two losses at home, kind of flips the narrative that you were thinking before these recent four games. And I think the situation where, a lot's changed. Teams are defending Colin Sexton differently. John Petty can't find his shot down the stretch. Dante Hall isn't getting enough touches, but he's also not demanding touches. And there's just not enough help offensively. And you see situations like you had last night, which was probably the worst of it, where you go, 14-plus minutes without a field goal? You missed 19 straight shots. So I just think it's a situation where Alabama was doing everything in its power to give away what seemed like a pretty easy NCAA tournament bid after they beat Tennessee.
Mark, I don't know how to say this nicely. Why are they so unnecessarily bad? Like they have good players and a good nucleus, and they have winnable games that they've had on the schedule. Why are they so, like Avery Johnson said multiple times, in a fog, stuck, can't get the ball to move? The things he's talked about over and over and over again this season. Why does this keep happening?
Well, the only thing I can point to is this. When you have a player who sort of is bigger than the team to a degree, people tend to stand around and watch that guy. And I think a lot of times people stand around and watch Sexton. The defense is dedicating a man and a half to him. And if he passes it off to, say, John Petty for an open three, and John Petty misses that three, then you don't have to defend John Petty as much because you can say, okay, well, if this guy's not going to be making shots, then why do we have to defend him? And then your other guy on the inside, Dante Hall, he's a 14 and 10 type guy. But when he gets his touches, he's not as aggressive as you'd like for him to be. So it's multiple things. Your best shooter, John Petty, isn't making shots down the stretch. Dante Hall, when he gets touches, doesn't seem to be aggressive, but at the same time, they're not giving him enough touches. And Braxton Key's coming along to a degree, but, he's still sort of a little bit away from being the player he was last year. And teams can defend Colin Sexton a little bit easier, and he sometimes takes shots that make you scratch your head, but at the same time, you're thinking, who else is going to take shots? It's not him. So it's just a situation where the pieces – this is a head-scratching team because they're athletic and long enough, and they play defense well enough for the most part to compete with anybody in the country. But at the same time, they have offensive scoring drops where you're just like, have you guys ever shot a basketball before in your lives? What's happening out there?
Had you ever seen anything that resembled that 14.5-minute stretch that you saw in the first half?
No, it was one of those things where you're watching it live and you're like, okay, Alabama usually has a 4 to 5 minute scoring drought every single game. I mean, that goes back to the Anthony Grant era. 4 to 5 minutes, Alabama is going to go without a field goal. But then you're watching this thing sort of snowball, and some of those shots were like halfway in the rim. They were like in the net, and they were like, nope, not going in right now. It was just insane to watch live, and you could just sort of hear the fans reacting, and you're just like, man, you kind of feel bad for them because you're like, it's not like they're not trying, but at the same time, shots just weren't going in. I mean, some of the shots would be in, and they would pop out. And it was just one of those things where I'd never seen anything like that. I feel like, you really have to try to miss that many shots in a row. I mean, Sexton had a few layups where you're like, okay, he clearly beat his man. He's just going to easily lay this up. And it just rolled out the rim. It was just really weird stuff.
Yeah, you, we're talking with Mark Burnett now. You bring up a good point that they were missing layups in that. They were missing easy shots, and it just seemed like that thing just snowballed upon itself that, I don't know. I was kind of rooting at one point for them not to score another field goal just because I wanted more history. I just wanted the thing to keep snowballing over and over again. But aside from the comicalness of that, if you can get past the disaster of it, is Alabama in danger, real danger, of missing the NCAA tournament?
Well, I think it's one of those things where you have to look at how the tournament selection committee, how they value how you finish this down the stretch. Because I think in basketball, they look at top 25 wins when you get them. So Alabama has five of those, and that's good. But at the same time, in three of these four losses, they've been by double digits. You lose to Arkansas team on the road. The Auburn loss, you can kind of say, okay, very few teams go into Auburn Arena, if anybody goes into Auburn Arena to have success, but you don't want to see them get beat by, almost 20 points. And then on your home floor, where you're supposed to be really good, Florida comes in here and actually boat races you as well. So I just don't think it's been a good stretch, good 2 weeks for Alabama. I think they need this Texas A&M game probably need a game or two in the tournament just to feel well about themselves on selection Sunday, because it's one of those things where it went from being a surefire bid, as long as you don't collapse down the stretch, and then they turn around and collapse down the stretch.
Mark, do you believe leadership is an issue for this team?
I mean, yeah, to a degree. I don't think they have anybody who feels comfortable enough to get in the face of another guy and say, hey, this is what you should be doing. Dante Hall would seemingly be that guy because he is the most experienced. He's the oldest. But at the same time, he's just not a vocal leader. I think it's probably hard for Sexton to be that guy. I know, you know, he's probably the most talented player, but at the same time, he's just a true freshman. And I think sometimes guys can tune younger guys out. I don't know who else would even be a guy. Riley Norris would be the senior leader, but he's injured. He's not playing, so it's kind of hard to – you can lead from the sideline, but at the same time, you can't be on the floor with the guy. So I don't think they have anybody who's a grab you, hey, man, calm down, pass the ball, do this type of guy that can get in your face and sort of be that guy. But, yeah, I mean, Avery Johnson said that last night. I think you definitely need sort of a vocal leader because at times, you know, players even can tune coaches out because, you know, it's a lot easier to listen to your peers sort of criticizing you than it is a coach at times. So, yeah, I think they're sort of lacking that vocal leader.
Mark, how well do you think Avery Johnson has connected with this basketball team?
Well, I think he's connected with them pretty well. I just think it's one of those things where you look at some of these guys, like, you know, I don't want to necessarily single anybody out, but I kind of have to make this point. But I think sometimes with young guys, when things aren't going their way, you kind of see them drop their head a little bit. I see that with John Petty sometimes when if he's not shooting well, then his defense suffers. He kind of checks out at times. You see Sexton when he gets into these modes where he's going to play hero ball to a degree. And if it's working, it's great. But if it's not working, then, like I said before, everybody's kind of standing around watching him. You have situations where Dante Hall, I don't think he's as aggressive as he should be. And I think some of that goes back to coaching. You have to tell these guys, like, hey, this is your role, Dante. I need you to demand the ball in the post. I think he's connected well with them. But at the same time, I like I said earlier, I think it's just a situation where you need that vocal leader on the court because players can tune a coach out at times, and I think they sometimes listen better to their peers, the guys who are out there doing it with them, than they do even the coach at times.
Mark, you brought up Dante Hall earlier, and I think that's a great point for this Alabama team because the evidence is out there. It's empirical, and it's right in front of you. The more touches and the more shots he gets, the better off this team is. In fact, I think he has 19 shots combined in his last four games, and those were those four losses, by the way. He had 20 in the previous two, which were wins against Tennessee and LSU, just for the latest data on that. Why don't you think he is getting more? Chris Stewart talked to us on Monday, said that over the weekend that Arkansas clogged up the lane, but that needs to be coached to where he can actually get more and more touches still. I mean, that has to be an adjustment Alabama makes, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. I think it's twofold. I think, you know, if you're not making perimeter shots, if Sexton, Petty, Ingram, Key aren't making perimeter shots, then I can, you know, pack the lane a little bit more. Like, I'm not going to let you throw it to this guy who's a double-double machine. And sometimes I think, too, when Dante does get some of his touches, he takes too long to make a move. Like, I think you need to be a little bit more sudden because, hey, you may not get it back, you know. But and also, I think he just needs to demand more touches. I think, you know, at this point of the year, he should be the guy who can say, who cares, you know, what's happening. I don't care how they're playing me. Give me the ball. If they bring the double team, then I will find someone for an open shot on perimeter because if you double him, somebody's going to be open. So I think it's a situation where, at the end of the day, you know, if they are missing perimeter shots, then you can clog lane a little easier. But I really think he should be demanding the ball at this point of his career because he was playing like a madman in that Tennessee and LSU games where he's catching lobs all over the place. But then, you know, like you said, those numbers have gone down so much. I think it's on coaching and also the responsibility of the player.
Mark, great stuff, man. Really do appreciate the time, and look forward to doing it again soon.
All right, man. Sick minivan. You know I can't get out here without mentioning that. I can't wait till 8:20.
I appreciate it. We've already mentioned it a little bit. We'll spend some time on it then. But hey, you know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. It's for the greater good.
Mark's tuning in.
All right, man. You guys have a good day.
Find Mark's work at secountry.com. Follow him on Twitter at Mark_Burnett, M-A-R-Q. So yeah, we'll spend some time on that. We may even get to it in our next segment. But what I really want to talk to you about next segment, Arky, is there's a story that is going to be handed over to Hollywood, and a movie is going to be made. What that story is, you might not believe, and I'm going to tell you next. Welcome back into the Madison RV Studio, Cube Show Live, 6 to 10 a.m. weekday mornings on The Ump, umpsports.com. Appreciate Lance Zierlein and Mark Burnett for joining the show already. You can catch those on the podcast over at umpsports.com. Still have Katie George, former Louisville volleyball player, going to join us, former Miss Kentucky as well, at 9 o'clock this morning. Lance Taylor, the Jocks Roundtable, 9:20 this morning. I wanted to get to you, Arky Shea, a story about a movie that is going to be made. If you had a story about food that was going to be made into a movie, what would you suspect that was going to be?
The food? Stroganoff.
As in where, how the recipe originated, or who makes the best, or a competitive stroganoff cook-off, or...
You know how during Christmas you can just put
it
like...
It just sounds gross, by the way.
You can just put on your TV, like, fire crackling?
Yeah.
That's what I would do with stroganoff. Just steam coming off of the noodles and ground beef, or ground steak. It's pretty good, too.
This is more about a snack.
Not ground steak, but a steak.
Yeah. Not necessarily a... not necessarily a dish, so to speak.
Okay.
It's being turned into a serious feature-length film.
I laughed at stupid movies, but then they made the emoji movie, and you're like, okay.
And we've got Lance Taylor coming up a little bit later in the show. We'll ask him. A biopic detailing the creation of Flaming Hot Cheetos.
Like a full-length feature film?
Yep. It's been greenlit after a highly competitive sale with multiple studios vying for the project.
Sure,
it's being reported by Variety. Fox Searchlight and Devon Franklin are set to produce the film Flamin' Hot, which depicts the true life and accidental rags-to-riches story that started a billion-dollar snack flavor.
Accidental.
Billion? Flamin' Hot Cheetos have done $1 billion in sales already?
Rags-to-riches. You know the poor old Cheeto growing up on the farm in Kentucky?
No, actually, it's Robert Montanez.
He turned into a rich Cheeto.
Is the person responsible for the chip. He's a Mexican-born janitor working at the Frito-Lay's Rancho Cucamonga plant in 1976. According to Fox News Latino, Montanez immigrated to California as a child, dropped out of high school, worked as a farmhand on SoCal farms before ending up at Frito-Lay, where a plant mess-up changed his life.
Who says you need to go to high school?
A problem on a production line left a batch of Cheetos without cheese dust one day. According to Grub Street, wanting the food to go to waste, Montanez took them home and decided to spice them up a little bit.
Montanez is a hero. He saw something that was wrong, and he went and fixed it.
Working off of a favorite Mexican street food, elotes, which is grilled corn smothered in salt, lime juice, chili powder, and typically mayonnaise and cotija cheese, Montanez decided to create the same flavor profile and coat the bear Cheetos in it.
Yeah, that's a lot of effort, by the way, for some Cheetos.
Now, wait a minute. Am I just out of the loop or stupid for thinking that quote-unquote Flaming Hot Cheetos came to market like 2-3 months ago?
I wouldn't use the word dumb or stupid. I would use the word paleoed.
So these have been around for years?
They've been around for a while.
Okay.
They've been around for a while.
Montanez said, I see the corn man adding butter, cheese, and chili to the corn, and I thought,
what is this accent?
What if I add chili to a Cheeto? I don't know. I'm trying to help him out.
You're helping him out?
His creation was a success. Montañez, who struggled to learn English, told Fox he copied a marketing strategy from a book he found at the library for his presentation. I'm a little bit of an artist, so I even designed the bags and put Cheetos in it, Montañez told Fox. So, yeah, the story of Flamin' Hot Cheetos is coming to theaters near you soon. You pumped about that one?
No, but I would like to hear the story of who created sour cream and onion. That's the story of anything, because that goes on everything now.
Hey, man, I got some onions and some sour cream. I got nothing else in my fridge.
It's like...
So I'm packing them together and putting them on chips.
Isn't that one of the... Like, how many foods do you know that you've just looked at in your life and thought, who was the first one to eat this? Who thought, I'm going to eat this?
Have you seen what Lay's is doing recently?
But I mean... Just
throwing out these rando flavors?
Like, who saw a lobster and was like, I'm going to have some of that?
I think that was probably more by necessity.
Who ate a snail was like, this escargot is delicious.
What's the Tom Hanks movie where he's stuck on the island? Why can't I remember the name of that movie?
Wilson. That's not the name of the movie.
No, but that is the dude.
Castaway.
Yeah, have you seen Castaway?
Yeah.
He had to eat lobster.
Yeah, but no, he didn't create, that guy didn't turn it into a market. That guy was using an ice skate to try to freaking get coconut milk. Or water, or whatever it's technically called when it's inside there. This is one of those things where you're like, who thought of this? Why did we think this is a good thing to eat? And why is this worth $1 billion? And why couldn't someone just say, let's spice up Cheetos?
You're telling me an entire Frito-Lay factory was out of cheese powder. And so you had dry Cheetos sitting there. And they're like, what do we do?
Package it. No one will know.
Boss, we're out of cheese powder.
You know, my Cheetos do not have any cheese
at
all.
Yeah, and couldn't you just bag it and say, no one's going to, they're not going to know. They'll probably be stoned. Who cares?
Look, you know how, first of all, that's 100%
true. Let's just bank on the people who open this are so high, they don't know that there's no cheese powder on it.
And worst case scenario, they come back to the store and they get their 49 cents back. Fine.
We're like, no, you're the winner. You found the secret bag.
That means you get another bag. That's what the secret bag means. No, this is right up there with those. How's that food? And how is that a movie? Because I read that the curling story is going to be turned into a movie, too.
No.
Like, no one's watching this.
No.
This should be. These are all Netflix things that they're going to try to convince us to watch that no one's really going to watch. I'm not watching a movie on Cheetos being made. Especially when I know the story.
Well, I think this is more about the story of how the guy came up with the idea.
Yeah, you know what that is? That's a 4-minute docu video on YouTube. That's what that is.
Yeah, I think you can almost get that on Snapchat.
This is Don Cornholio.
Ran out of cheese powder, took corn recipe from the street, put it on blank Cheetos. Made new flavor.
You know what I know?
I can get that on one snap.
This movie is going to be probably 98 minutes long. And 91 minutes will be this guy's backstory. And then we'll have 6.5 minutes of this is how we made it. And then roll credits. So this is basically a vehicle to tell this dude's story. And I'm sure it's a fine story. He dropped out of high school. Look, I dropped out of high school twice. I don't get a movie made about me. We got to create a dish. I figured it out. We got to create a food. Now you have this ice cream pie that you got that you've been sitting on top of.
I'm not letting that go to be a major motion picture film because that recipe's got to stay close to home.
Doesn't mean you can't still make it. It doesn't mean you give up the rights to eat it.
People are chiming in on my Spanish accent.
It's pretty bad. Like bad as in like when Batman cool. Like, dude, that's a bad man.
When we come back, we talk the minivan.
Mamma mia.
Next on the Cube Show.